of speech. Free speech. Yeah, or a bridge in the freedom of press.
Free press.
For the right of the people
peacefully to assemble. Free people.
Petition the government for
redress of grievances. Redress.
Free speech. Free press. Free people. Redress.
Free speech.
Free, I speak.
Free
already.
Free people.
Redress.
Redress.
Congress shall make no law. Congress shall make no law.
Thanks for returning to Great Speeches and Interviews on Access Sacramento and The Voice. I'm Steve Lerman. Today's program starts out with Race Baiting and Eric Deegans. Eric Deegans is a TV and media critic for the Tampa Bay Times and argues that the media has fractured into ever smaller divisions populated by pundits who play upon the fears and prejudices of their viewers to garner larger audiences. Mr. Deegans posits that the pursuit of higher ratings and greater website page views erodes political dialogue.
Thank you very much for having me. I'm here to talk about some of the themes from my new book, Race Baiter. And, you know, it's interesting. I got the idea a while ago to basically take all the writing that I've been doing about race and society and media and kind of put it into one book. And it was interesting. It was interesting and it was depressing, I'll be honest. I was bringing in this book for a landing right around March of last year. And if you guys remember, around March of last year was when the Trayvon Martin situation became a huge national story. And I'm sitting in Florida close to ground zero. So we have all this reporting going on about this 17-year-old kid, African-American, walking in a subdivision in Florida, seemingly possibly minding his own business, and he winds up in a fight with a neighborhood watch volunteer and gets shot to death. Three weeks before my deadline, right? So all of a sudden, I have to figure out how to incorporate all this stuff about race and media that came out in the wake of that really explosive international story. And then just as that started to wind down, the Sandra Fluck situation happened, where this student at Georgetown University went before a congressional committee, wanted to talk about having her insurance cover contraception, and for her trouble, she got called a prostitute and a slut by Rush Limbaugh on national radio. And then that cost him 50-plus advertisers and actually threatened the whole business model of talk radio. So the talk radio chapter gets a workover, right? But what it also convinced me of is a really important idea, which is that America is trying something that is messy and complicated, but also really important. We're trying to build a country where our diversity is our strength, where you're not subjugated or held back or set apart because of your cultural background or what you look like or what your gender is, but where we value that stuff and we find that to be something that adds to our strength and makes us a better nation. And for better or for worse, there's not very many nations out there that are trying to do that the way we are. So it's going to be messy, it's going to be complicated, and it's going to be tough. And so are conversations about race and race baiting in America. When I try to have these talks, I basically have a few ground rules. Very simple. First, this is a conversation. So as we go forward, I'm going to try and ask you guys to give me a little feedback. We're doing this for C-SPAN television, so we may have to have some people get you a mic if you want to talk. So if we can get ready, who's going to be doing that? Beth, you're going to be doing that? So as the presentation goes on, I may ask a few questions here or there, and if you want to pipe in, just stick your hand up and Beth will come over with the mic and we'll get your comments. But we want this to be a conversation. Second, mistakes don't make you racist. One of the things that I think is both the good thing and the bad thing about demonizing racism in America is that we tend to think now of prejudice and stereotyping as these ugly ideas that are over there on the fringe that only certain people will indulge, right? But in a weird way, that's like outsourcing racism. That's like saying that only certain kind of people who are really awful people and probably wear white sheets, you know, in their off hours, that they're the only people who can fall prey to stereotypes and prejudice. And that's just not true, right? And falling prey to stereotypes doesn't make you a racist. It doesn't make you a bad person. What it makes you is human. Also, everyone gets respect. So if you decide you want to raise your hand and you want to dispute something that I've said, you have an alternative point of view, I definitely want to hear it. And I want to be respectful about hearing it as long as you're respectful about hearing what I got to say, right? Everybody needs respect. And these are concepts applied to many marginalized groups in America. So as much as I'm going to talk about black and white, because frankly that's what I have firsthand experience with, right? We're also going to talk about other groups. So this can stretch to how Muslims are treated. This can stretch to how gay people are treated. This can stretch to how Hispanics are treated. Any marginalized group in America has to struggle with how its image is portrayed in the media and media outlets that may profit by distorting that image. And that's what we're going to talk about. So here we are. This is old media. Those of you of a certain age in this room will be depressed to know how few students actually recognized this guy and this guy when I gave speeches earlier today. But I'm going to assume that we all know who they are. So Hawkeye Pierce from MASH and Walter Cronkite, the most trusted man in America at one point. One of the things that was interesting about MASH that I heard, until recently, it was the most watched episode of television, the finale for this show. And reportedly, according to myth and legend, whenever the commercials came on for the finale episode, the water table in New York went down, right? Because people were in the bathroom. That was before you could DVR stuff and like pause live television and all that stuff, you know? I was trying to explain to students what it was like to watch television when you didn't even have a VCR to tape it, you know? I felt like I was talking about the Stone Ages. Anyway, so this is old media. And what I tell people is if you want to know why 95% of things happen in media, figure out who's making money or who's losing money. Who's making money or who's losing money. So old media used to make money by getting together these big audiences, and then they would sell advertisers access to those big audiences. And that's how they made money. So if you want to get together a big audience, you can't have a message that's divisive, right? The whole point is to get a bunch of people together watching the same thing. So you're not going to have messages that pit one part of that group against the other part of that group, because then they won't get together and you won't be able to charge Procter & Gamble or McDonald's a whole lot of money for ads, right? All about money. Modern media monetizes niches. So modern media goes out and says, look, we're never going to get an audience the size of the finale of MASH or the Cosby Show or what Uncle Walter used to draw to the CBS Evening News. So we will find a niche. We will find young males, young white males, and we will create a channel called Comedy Central that specializes in the humor that they love. And we will super serve that lifestyle to the point where young white males will show up in droves. Or we will target older women. And we'll create a channel called Lifetime that is filled with movies where they are constantly in peril and looking for men to come and save them from the peril. And that will be the channel that super serves that lifestyle, right? But along the way, there are some channels that use stereotyping and prejudice to draw in audiences and also hold those audiences, inoculate them from going to other places. As a matter of fact, some of the same tactics that are used to mobilize political parties are now used to galvanize media audiences. So when you think about the latest election that we all survived, I was in Florida, believe me, it was tough to survive it. I only had to wait 45 minutes to vote, so that wasn't too bad. But the same tactics that are used to mobilize political parties, so if you're a politician, you don't just say, I'm great, and the other guy won't be good at the job. You say, the other guy's a liar. You say, the other guy can't be trusted. You say, the other guy is morally reprehensible or morally suspect, right? You don't just say that you can do the job better. The other person is somehow deficient. And what we're seeing in modern media, news media, the same thing. So Fox News doesn't just say, we're better at reporting the news. Fox News says, the other side is liberally biased. The other side is not going to tell you the truth. The other side is deliberately going to trick you because they have a political agenda. So you should trust us. But what ends up happening is that erodes people's trust in all journalism, right?
Tune in to great speeches and interviews from 6 to 8 p.m. on Sundays on Access Sacramento, or go to greatspeechesandinterviews.blogspot.com. See the big picture on financial, military, environmental crises, war and peace, the economy, and climate change are covered. And then there's music and humor. Challenge your thinking with great speeches and interviews from 6 to 8 p.m. on Sundays, or go to greatspeechesandinterviews.blogspot.com.
We are Republican members of the Judiciary Committee.
Harumph, harumph, harumph.
And we are very concerned about Supreme Court Justice nominee Elena Kagan.
Harumph.
Well said. The right will fight Obama's pick tonight, 'cause we still have a Robert Bork grudge.
Her height is slight. Perhaps a bill will write. You must be at least this tall to judge. There's rumors flying, something awful. I hear she once played softball.
That means she's gay?
It might.
It was revealed that when she played, she stayed in left field. Not right.
Let's be polite. The plus side is she's white. But that's where our support for her ends.
She might excite this aging court.
That's right.
Now to this court, legal briefs means depends. Forget her, we have found a justice whose views do not disgust us. So let us all unite.
Facebook campaigns convinced us that Obama should name
Betty White.
So, why should we care about this? Why should we care about the fact that there are stereotypes and prejudice in media? Why should we care about this? That is the question I'm asking you that I actually expect you to answer. So why should we care about this? Way in the back. Because we want an objective perspective. Why do we want an objective perspective?
Kated, so we can make an educated decision on the validity of our, we can develop our own perspective because of democracy depends upon that.
Right. It seems like you're saying in a complicated way something that's much simpler, though. And it's even summed up in one word. I want one more reaction before I get to what I think. Why do we care about this? Go ahead. You can give him the mic right there.
Because who knows who's going to be the minority in the future? It could totally affect you.
Well, that's true. That, self-interest,
yeah,
right?
Self-interest, if that's
you
the
might
case.
Be the person who gets marginalized or misrepresented. Well, one reason I think is because portrayals of minorities reflect how the majority society views and treats these issues and people. right? So American movies and television go out into the world, and they are a beacon to the world about how America feels about black people, about women, about Hispanics, about everything. Because media is created with a set of values. Every time you watch a TV show, there's a set of values that are sort of embedded in that presentation. You know who the good guy is. You know who the bad guy is. You know where the tension in the story is, right? And so these portrayals sort of go out there. One of the things that's interesting to me is that I still can't believe that back in 1997, Ellen DeGeneres landed on the cover of Time magazine just by saying, "Yep, I'm gay." And I don't know, a couple years ago, Neil Patrick Harris said he was gay, and it was like two paragraphs in Us Weekly, right? That's how far we've come in like 10 years, 12 years, from the cover of Time magazine to we can barely care enough to get a blog post out of it, right? So what changed that was the portrayal of gay people in the media. We got used to seeing gay people, gay relationships, gay life in the media, and we suddenly realized, Stan, that you're gay is, nah, okay, it's not that big a deal, really, right? But that only changes if the portrayals are accurate and fair. Media images resonate, especially with those who have no practical experience. I was in a band that was moderately successful here in Bloomington. It was called the Voyage Band. We used to play Jakes, and we used to play the Bluebird. And we got signed to Motown from here and made a record for them. And one of the last things I did with that band is we went to Japan, and we played for 2 months in a club over there. And there wasn't much to do, I tell you. When you don't speak the language and you don't read the language, then you can't read a newspaper, you can't listen to the radio, you can't watch television. But the one thing I could do is I could go to the movie theater and I could watch American movies, because they don't dub over the lines. They just put subtitles in Japanese. So it was just like being in a regular American theater, except I was the only Western person in a 200-seat theater. Not the only black person, the only non-Asian person, right? So I'm sitting there and I'm watching these movies and I'm seeing how black people are portrayed in these movies. And a lot of times, I'll tell you, it was full of stereotypes. It was kind of insulting. It was kind of depressing. And then I walk out of the theater and I'm wondering, what do these people think about me because they just saw that, right? So media images resonate. And then finally, accuracy. That's what I was getting at with you. I think you were kind of saying a bunch of things, but one of the things you were saying is that if you don't have accurate information, you can't make good decisions in a democracy, right? And in the School of Journalism, we're all about accuracy. So media outlets that are filled with stereotypes and prejudice are not accurate. So in my book, each chapter takes on a different element. I think what I want to do now, especially since C-SPAN is taping this for Book TV, I guess I should read some of the book, right? So I'm going to read a little bit out of the first chapter. This is a passage that involves me and my good friend Bill O'Reilly. So the first and only time I met Fox News Channel star Bill O'Reilly, he looked at me like I owed him money. The situation was, I will admit, an uncomfortable one. He and a publicity executive at Fox News had already turned down an interview request for this very book, despite the fact that he inspired the title. And though he planned several stops around my St. Petersburg, Florida home base to tout his own new book in early 2012, sharing a cup of joe with me was not particularly high on his to-do list. That's because we have, as a therapist might say, a little bit of history. At various times on his top-rated evening cablecast, O'Reilly has called me dishonest, racially motivated, and one of the biggest race baiters in the country for criticizing the way he talks about race on his program. So as I planned this tome on how race issues and prejudice play out in media, I wanted to talk with O'Reilly, and he didn't want to talk with me. Fair enough. But when the top-rated anchor came to give a speech in nearby Sarasota, organizers emailed me an invitation to a small press conference he was holding before the event. "We have history," I warned. "He probably won't be happy to see me there." And sure enough, when we gathered in a small green room area deep inside the bowels of the Van Wezel Hall, tight smiles were the order of the day. Two reporters from local papers and two high school students flanked me at a small round table where O'Reilly was going to field questions. And after talking with the anchor about my presence, the president of the group presenting the lecture series had one question. "Will you be civil?" "Of course," I replied, "as long as he is." Until this day, most all of our disagreements had occurred in media. After I wrote a story for the St. Petersburg Times in 2002, panning a primetime special he put together for the Fox Broadcast Network, he complained about the newspaper so much that my email filled with caustic messages from his fans. When I sat on a 2008 panel discussion at a symposium in Minneapolis covered by the anti-consolidation media watchdogs Free Press, he sent a producer to interview me on camera, ambush style, asking why I hadn't appeared on his show. "Bill hasn't asked me," I answered. Never heard back. And once I got a call out of the blue from a producer on his show wanting to know what political party I was registered under, whether I'd given any money to political candidates. "Well, I'm a registered Democrat and I'm a journalist," I told the producer, "so I don't have any money to give anyone." He would later note in one of his shows that he couldn't find, quote, "one TV critic who isn't a liberal or registered Democrat," unquote, without detailing his research methods. If he relied on phone calls like the one I got, I bet he didn't get many answers. But nothing seemed to get under his skin like the controversy over comments he made on his one-time radio show back in 2007 about Sylvia's Restaurant, a well-established, black-owned soul food eatery in Harlem. Recalling an experience dining there with Al Sharpton, O'Reilly told listeners, "I couldn't get over the fact that there was no difference between Sylvia's Restaurant and any other restaurant in New York City. I mean, it was exactly the same, even though it's run by blacks, primarily black patronship. It was the same. That's really what the society is about here in the USA. There's no difference." Later in the show, during a conversation with fellow pundit Juan Williams, he noted, quote, "there wasn't one person in Sylvia's who was screaming, 'MF'er, I want more iced tea.' It was like going into an Italian restaurant in an all-white suburb, in the sense of people were sitting there and they were ordering and having fun, and there wasn't any kind of craziness at all." The liberal watchdog group Media Matters posted a transcript with the most disturbing lines highlighted, sparking coverage in the Associated Press, the New York Daily News, CNN, and the Tampa Bay Times.
That I go for some sweet inspiration, a place that I know for the healing of the nations. There is a place in this town where they share a human vision. So come on downtown, feel the power of their mission. Come on downtown, share the power of their vision. If you are looking for love, I cannot tell you what to do. If you're looking for truth, look inside of you. If you're looking for God, that's between God and you. If you're looking for peace, tell your friends the news. If you're looking for peace, tell everyone the news. Gandhi's camping out at City Hall. Gandhi's camping out at City Hall. Gandhi's camping out at City Hall. Every day Gandhi's camping out at City Hall. Every night, every day, every night, through all kinds of weather, getting stronger and better. They got the power cause they got the heart, and they got the vision. If you are feeling helpless and you don't know where to start, before taking action, take back your heart. If you have lost it, you can find it if you go camping too, with Gandhi and friends at City Hall with you. With Gandhi and family at City Hall right there with you. Violence are as old as the hills. It's our nature to love, not our nature to kill. So down at the peace camp, it's no mystery. They're simply doing what comes naturally. They're simply being what comes naturally. Gandhi's camping out at City Hall. Gandhi's camping out at City Hall. Gandhi's camping out at City Hall every day. Gandhi's camping out at City Hall every night, every day, every night, through all kinds of weather, getting stronger and better. They got the power cause they got the heart, and they got the vision. Nature to love, not our nature to kill. So down at the peace camp, it's no mystery. They're simply doing what comes naturally. They're simply being what comes naturally. Gandhi's camping out at City Hall. Come on down, Gandhi's camping out at City Hall, won't you join him? Gandhi's camping out at City Hall every day. Gandhi's camping out at City Hall every night, every day, every night, through all kinds of weather, getting stronger and better. They got the power cause they got the heart, and they got the vision.
Now for something completely different.